Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens, and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Chris Mandel.
Hello.
Nice wet twat between your legs.
This isn't just any old brothel, Jamie. This northern accent is so that people think they're getting something a little bit more exotic.
Welcome to Dragoncast. I think it's episode 18. Firstly, apologies because I've got a CBD gummy in my mouth.
Oh my God.
I know, I'm going crazy.
I thought it was a fisherman's friend.
And again, I'm still a week behind in uploading the OA episodes. I had another brain fart. Episode 2 still hasn't been uploaded yet. But I think that's fine because it means that we've got a week.
Maybe this is the cadence that the OA is going to follow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right.
I think so. Let me take this out of my mouth because it's very rude.
It's a nice ASMR sort of approach to.
Well, that's what gets all the big bucks, right?
Yeah.
That's what gets all the big bucks.
I could wrap some Christmas presents while we do the podcast. Yeah. That'd be a nice sensory sensation for people.
And we can talk about anxiety or something like that. You know, yeah. That's what gets the
people
listeners, mate.
Tap the microphone, don't they? Anyway. If people are looking for that sort of thing, you have come to the wrong place.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
Get that anywhere. Exactly. And far more sexually charged than anything we could do.
I mean, right. So, mild sidebar. ASMR is just kind of, it's a sexual thing, right? Almost certainly.
I think it's one of those things where it's like, it helps if the person doing it is hot. Like most things.
Yeah, like most things, yeah.
But I feel like I'm very like, I don't really see men doing ASMR.
No, literally, it's all like, and here I am. I'm just gonna. Like, I've got a razor. I'm just gonna cut this soap really gently.
Yeah.
And if you could just imagine that my fingernails were running over your balls, it's like that, right?
Basically,
that's basically what it is.
I don't feel catered to. I want, you know, hot men doing it, and if there are any out there, let me know because I'd subscribe.
Yeah, dragoncast.deafdoris.com. Any hot men ASMR for Chris, that would be, you know, just do a little stand-up for him. Just help a guy out.
But don't waste any bars of soap, because when I see them cutting it up, I'm like, what the fuck are you going to do with that now?
£9 in Lush, that was. Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, you can cut up anything you want in Lush. That's just like a cystitis chemist factory. It's horrible.
How are you?
I'm good.
Generally.
I'm good. Am I okay? There's not enough podcasts in the world for that answer. I think okay generally. I'm kind of okay. Like we were saying, it's the build up to Christmas. If you're freelance or, you know, or we've got family, you know, all of those kind of things. It can be a very stressful time. Mm-hmm. It's a weird time. I always find Christmas a very weird time. I just want to say I just want to say, pay tribute to someone who we lost this week, actually. IRL. A wonderful woman called Leslie Land, who many people who listen to this will know, if they know me or know Chris or work in television or the media. Leslie was a wonderful, wonderful PR exec who had worked pretty much, as most PRs do, work for everybody. They kind of like just tootle around like everywhere. But Leslie was special. I met Leslie back when she worked on Big Brother. She'd worked for Taylor Herring. She worked for, you know, Sky, and ended up at Channel 4, where she was doing some great things. The last thing she worked on was the David Baddiel program that came out. Tragically died over the weekend very suddenly, and, you know, very young, 41. So, you know, Leslie, my goodness me, it was a pleasure.
Yeah,
awful news.
Knew Leslie. I didn't know Leslie a great deal. I've been in touch with her for a very long time. Had a coffee with her only a couple of months ago. Just one of the most brilliant people to work in our industry. And the shock, everyone is just so upset. And we're just sending our thoughts to her friends and family and her colleagues. Just an absolutely heartbreaking loss.
Awful.
Very much missed.
How are you anyway, Chris, apart from that sad news? Are you okay?
Good. I am good. I've got some new neighbours who moved in at the flat opposite me.
New neighbours opposite? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because there's a building opposite my block of flat.
Spying neighbours, Brendan, right?
Well, they are literally right now, they're sat out on the balcony smoking, just watching me.
Smoking cigarettes or roofer doobies?
They've just moved in, so they've got one chair between them. So one of them stands and one of them sits.
Describe them. Male, female, male, male, female, female.
Male, female, married, I think. I mean, I think late 30s, but because of their lifestyle choices, they look early 40s. I hope they're not listening.
Wow. Lifestyle choices, what? Heavy smokers, drinkers?
Yeah, they just look a bit
rough around the edges.
Yeah. They've not seen a sort of young, cosmopolitan, fabulous, like the residents of my flat.
Few too many hot dogs before the night bus. Kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, they're outside now in a dressing gown. In this weather, Jamie, they're out in a dressing gown each.
They're one of those, are they? Scuzzy.
It's crazy because...
Scuzzy neighbours is what you're trying to say.
Listen, I'm as scuzzy as they come.
No, I've got the best scuzzy neighbour story ever, right? I live where I live, by some weird twist of fate or bylaws. Mm-hmm. I also own the road. Which has a communal kind of parking area for a block of flats at the top of the road, and generally it's all fine. You know, it's slightly chaotic because I own the road, but they need access to their garage. It's all shit like that, right? And anyway, these new neighbours moved in. They're not here anymore, thank God. About a decade ago, they were only here for about a year, but what a wild ride that year was. On the first day, right? The first day that they moved in. Now, you know, it's an awkward time for everybody, isn't it? Moving into a new place, you want to impress the neighbours, you want to show yourself in your best light, or all that kind of stuff. This neighbour moved into the flat, and within an hour of being there, had hung their wet washing on my fence.
Already got a load in the laundry.
That was their introduction to everybody that worked there. I walk out and I'm just like, what the fuck is that? And it wasn't just a couple of pairs of jeans. It was smalls, it was pants, it was bra.
So they've brought that with them. They've brought that.
Yeah, in a bin bag.
In a bin bag.
And it was just like, one end tied to one part of my fence. It was just like, I was just so, what the fuck do you do in those situations? Mental.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Also, I mean, I sort of respect the get your priorities straight, you know, get the stuff dried, but that is a bit much.
Crazy. Anyway, enough of neighbours, enough of sadness, enough of our private lives. We're into season two, baby.
So good.
We are into our season two rewatch of Game of Thrones. Ujima, what the Twitter poll ended yesterday or late Saturday, and I'm starting to detect a pattern, I have to say. The episodes that got chosen were, quite symmetrical, I think. So episode one, which we're going to talk about in a minute, episode five, and episode nine, which may as well be episode 10. So luckily we got... Luckily, we got Blackwater.
We got
episode one, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And what's episode five?
Is the Ghost of Harrenhal. I think it's the one with the shadow baby assassin.
Okay.
I think. So I would say, actually, it is interesting because the way that we are able to do polls on Twitter means that
You have to take one for the beginning, one for the middle.
It's kind of always going to be like that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I change that next time and do just one as each, as a tweet in a thread, and the ones that get the most likes.
Or we could between us pick like the four that we think are really good, or the five that we think are really good, and then we get people to vote on which three.
Yeah,
I don't hate this system either, but I think you're right. I think we're going to see a pattern that we're never going to get a 9 and a 10. It's sort of impossible.
Yeah, which feels, especially when we get to latter seasons, feels a bit sad, really. Let's talk about that. So we'll work out a better way of doing that. But I think season 2 is fine, actually.
Yeah, I do too. I think it is.
Shall we talk about it then? Season 2, episode 1, The North Remembers. And as ever, before we get stuck into Season 2, Episode 1 of Game of Thrones, let's have a little recap on the goings-on from our sister podcast previously on. See you in a few minutes. King Joffrey is watching men fight to the death. When one night Ser Dontus Hollard arrives too drunk to do battle, he orders him drowned in wine. Sansa Stark, his intended, persuades Joffrey to spare his life, and he is instead made his personal fool. Ser Dontos thanks Sansa for saving him. In the small council chamber, a white raven, larger than the average black ones, has been sent to announce that summer is at an end and winter is coming. Queen Cersei is enraged when her brother Tyrion arrives to announce their father has sent him to be Hand of the King. He points out to Cersei that she might need his help, for they are losing the war with Robb Stark. As Bran sleeps, he again sees through the eyes of his direwolf. Above the direwolf, a huge red comet is glowing in the sky. When he wakes up, the wildling Osha tells him that a red comet can only mean one thing. Dragons. Daenerys' tiny group of Dothraki soldiers are marching through a dry wasteland. She tries to feed her baby dragons on meat, but they refuse it. Horses and people are dying of exposure, so Daenerys sends her few remaining riders to scout out for shelter. Beyond the wall, the Night's Watch is staying with the wildling Craster, and are told to avoid Craster's wives, who are also his daughters, as you do. Craster claims not to have seen the lost Benjen Stark in years, but he does reveal Mance Rayder, the king beyond the wall, is marching south with his wildlings. On the bleak island of Dragonstone, a red priestess called Melisandre is burning the statues of gods in front of Lord Stannis Baratheon, Robert Baratheon's brother and the actual rightful heir to the Iron Throne. The maester of the castle pleads with her to stop, but is ignored, and Stannis draws a sword from the flames he has promised will help him conquer all of Westeros. The maester pleads to Davos Seaworth, Stannis' most loyal servant, but can't convince him to intervene. At a meeting with Stannis and Melisandre, the maester attempts to poison the witch, but she uses magic to switch the cups of wine, and the maester himself falls. Robb Stark, the king in the north, visits Jaime Lannister in his prison. He tells the Kingslayer that Lord Stannis has sent letters to the whole realm, revealing the truth about the incest between him and Cersei. In the capital, Tyrion meets with Shae, the prostitute he's fallen in love with. He reminds her that she must be careful. No one can know she's with him, or her life will be in danger. Robb sends his demands to the Lannisters. His sisters are to be freed, the body of his father Ned returned, and Joffrey is to renounce his claim on the North. His mother Catelyn is appalled as these demands will never be met, and her daughters are at the mercy of the Lannisters. Robb sends her to negotiate with Lord Renly Baratheon, who has also declared himself king. It's getting a bit busy, isn't it? And he's raised an army of 100,000 men. Robb also sends Theon Greyjoy back to the Iron Islands to try and get his family on side. The prostitute Roz is in Littlefinger's brothel when members of the Goldcloaks, the guards of King's Landing, burst in. In front of a horrified mother, they slaughter a baby, and it becomes clear that Joffrey, to ensure he has no rivals, has ordered the deaths of all King Robert Baratheon's bastard children. I'm gonna start off by saying this was far better than I remember it being. I was
100%. It's great.
I was like, this is a really fucking great episode. Considering like episode 10 of season 1 was all right. This really, I was expecting, oh God, we're going to have to be reminded of such and such about where such as, there was, exposition was kept pretty minimal. There were references to kind of Eddard being dead and the rest of it, but it kind of moved along at a pretty old pace and felt like, felt like modern day Game of Thrones, where there are lots of things in different places, right?
But also it didn't feel like there was really a great, I mean, that apart from Daenerys, which we'll get to, it wasn't like a lot of treading water. Like there was everything kind of moved forward. Like Cersei and Littlefinger had a great bit. Cersei slapped Joffrey, which was like really intense.
Amazing.
We also got like Rob and Jaime. That scene was way better than I remember. I didn't know that came at this point in the show where he's literally.
There was lots in this. There was lots in this that I'd forgotten. Question for you.
Yes.
Did you remember what the opening scene was? In my mind, the opening scene to this episode was Stannis on the beach with the...
That is fucking crazy because I swore the opening scene was... Yeah, I completely...
I thought I was going
so
mental. Yeah, that is weird because I was sat there and I thought, you know what, I'm going to ask Chris if he can remember... Because we all remember the final scenes of seasons, but the opening scenes are actually quite difficult to remember, like proper Mandela effect. I had genuinely convinced myself.
Is there any way that they re-edited it? No. I thought it opened with Stannis because I remember watching it at the time and thinking I have got enough to be keeping up with in this show.
Without
and
dealing with this
new guy and a new
I'm so glad it wasn't just me.
That is really interesting.
Anyone listening? Realize that.
This is an investigation.
We need to email HBO and find out about this because that's weird that both of us thought that.
That is so. I forgot. I mean, the Joffrey scene where it's his birthday and he has some guys beat each other up for his entertainment. I mean, if you were going to cut anything, that feels like the least necessary scene.
Well,
in that episode,
you say that, but there was a little. There was a little foreshadowing, a little setting up of a relationship in that, wasn't there? So that we met Sodontas the Fool.
Yes. Very important character because
he's very important. And now we understand why. And I couldn't quite remember why he had such affection for Sansa. And it was in effect because in that
she
opening
sort of spares
scene,
his life.
Sansa makes sure that Joffrey spares his life. You know, I'm going to try. Sodontas is in quite a lot, isn't he? He's in for a few more seasons, isn't he?
He shows up, incrementally. I think he's in this season more than season three, but then, season four, he sort of... because season three, he's the one that's like, the Tyrells want you to... You should marry him with the Tyrells. Or she tells him, I'm going to marry into the Tyrells. He tells Littlefinger, who doesn't like it, he tells the Lannisters, and then they marry her to Tyrion.
He's in that, and then he makes amends... later on after the very dry pie.
That's right.
We should get Tony on. I've become close personal showbiz friends with Tony Way, who plays Sodontas. We met, he came onto Thronecast back in the day when Rachel Paris and I hosted it. He came on after his death scene and we've stayed in touch. And I've interviewed him.
Let's get him on.
He's a brilliant character actor. He's been in Afterlife. He's been in tons of stuff. He's so good, and I love your fellow. So I'll see if he fancies coming on and reliving a few Game of Thrones memories.
That would be great. Yeah, yeah.
So a bit of a waterboard. He was waterboarded by wine. I know plenty of people. Sounds like 15 years of my life. but it was a good setup to show how the relationship between Joffrey and Sansa has moved on a bit. You know, since the death, she's now. She's fully indoctrinated. She's kind of like this glassy-eyed, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir.
Very subservient. But also, he seems to hate her even more for not fighting back. Like, the contempt he had for her in that scene is really
I forgot how good Joffrey was as a character. Just how much you just think, you fucking prick. You absolutely...
Awful. But also what was the thing that really stuck out when Tyrion sort of comes in and says, you know, she just lost her father. And I would have thought, given you just lost your father, remember, you'd be sadder. And you kind of go, like he just doesn't seem to give a shit that his dad died.
To care because
but he's
the king.
Really, you said indoctrination, that he's very like an incel, isn't he? He's got no emotion, no feeling, no love. And I think...
And any frustration he feels, he externalizes it towards Sansa, doesn't he?
And he's sort of like, now he's in charge.
He'd love 4chan, wouldn't he?
He'd love Fortune. God, he'd love it. Yeah, he'd love it.
And like we say, a seemingly unnecessary scene, but it also, there was that glimmer of sympathy and understanding between Sansa and Tyrion, which obviously went on to play a huge part in both of their
really heads. Really nice to see that already sort of like taking shape. And I thought he had this sense of like almost respect when he saw how good she was at going like, oh, I'm just loyal to Joffrey. He was a bit like, oh, you've cottoned on, like this is how you're going to survive. And I'm sure there's a line later where he goes, she's a lot smarter than she looks or something. He says to someone like, she's smart. Like she knows how to, that's the way to survive because.
Well, that's part of Joffrey's remit, isn't it? Is he can find empathy in almost everyone because of the way that Tyrion? He was brought up and Tyrion. Sorry. What did I say? Yeah.
Joffrey.
Sorry. Yeah, no, he's got no empathy for anyone. Tyrion, he will always be able to find empathy in pretty much anyone because of, you know, in Tywin's eyes, he was responsible for the death of his mother. He's an imp and has kind of had to face all of that stuff. And it's how he exists, isn't it? You know, and you saw it with that conversation with Cersei a bit later on when he reveals himself as the Gareth Keenan of King's. He was assistant to the Hand of the King, which was good.
That scene with him and Cersei is good because you know the episode is called The North Remembers, and the whole, you know, it's starting off a new season, but it's really reminding us just what a fuck up getting rid of Ned Stark was. That like, he's a really valuable prisoner, really valuable hostage. And because no one can control Joffrey, they've got rid of him, really valuable. And there is open revolt. There are now like kings in the north, kings in the east. Like everyone's trying to like capitalize on obviously Robert dying, but also Ned dying has set off other like.
Everyone feels like it's in a state of flux, don't they? So how many people are after the crown at the moment? So there's Renly, there's Stannis, there's Rob, and kind of vague kind of hints that Mance Rayder as well is.
And then vague hints that Theon's father, Balon Greyjoy, is also going to proclaim himself as a king.
And of course Daenerys.
So it's technically it's the War of the Five Kings, but there are about seven people trying for it. But one thing I wanted to say actually at the top of this is the comet, right? There's this comet that is...
Yeah, I've written down, I completely forgot about the comet and it just, it kind of like just disappeared, didn't it? And no one spoke of it again.
Yeah, they're just like, but in the book, the comet is everyone sort of sees it and they go, I'm going to interpret that to mean, like Daenerys thinks it's to do with dragons. And Osha, the wildling girl that works for Bran, is like, that means dragons are back. That means magic's back. And then Stannis sees it as like, oh, it's the Lord of Light. It means I'm the chosen one. Like everyone sees it and interprets it as like,
it's a Westeros horoscope. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. It's kind of, there is the, I think weirdly it does make sense that Stannis' scene would be at the start of the episode because the comet is the sign that the Lord of Light is like back.
He's back.
And everything like this. And the, so it's sort
we'll never
of,
hear,
like,
we'll never hear of it again, do we? That's kind of it now.
The
right?
comet. No, I don't think so. I think it's sort of a bit like, also it signifies the end of summer. That's another thing.
Yeah.
So we got that white raven that it's like, right. Winter is actually now coming, which I think given that the head of the Starks just died, it's like, oh, this feels really ominous. Winter's actually coming now. Is it because we've fucked up and like, but yeah, it's not really. And then there are no more, as far as I'm aware, no more astrological phenomenon in the show after this point. But just an interesting thing to sort of think about. All these kings think they've got the best claim, just as everyone who sees the comet is like, yeah, that's for me.
And what do you think it did signify in hindsight?
Well, I think the funniest thing is it's probably just a thing like, you know,
it's probably just a comet.
A comet. And, you know, some people didn't see it. Some people were inside that day and it means nothing to them. But whether it's there or not is besides the point because they're all so busy with their own shit, like on a granular level, doesn't matter what's going on up there. But I think, yeah, whatever happens when a comet forms, like when a chunk of rock burns to a certain temperature, that will happen. And I think that's kind of neat when you think about the show and the books. Sometimes they're like, sometimes a dream is just a dream. Sometimes it's just, you know, doesn't mean anything. What else did you think was really good?
Who did we meet in this one? So we met Craster, we met Gilly.
We met
Stannis, we met Melisandre, we met Davos. We got a brief glimpse of Gendry again. I thought there was a lot packed in there.
They're the only new ones we met. We didn't meet Margaery. We didn't meet Brienne yet. I think she comes in a couple of episodes, but that was the main thing with Stannis. And actually again, he's kind of introduced, I think he's introduced in what the first book, they sort of saved it. I think they were like, oh, there's way too much going on. But Stannis was in King's Landing. When Ned got named Hand, he was really offended. So he left to go back to Dragonstone. Now, Ned wrote letters he wrote a letter to Stannis being like, Robert's kids are bastards. So now we pick up with him having read it and gone, look, he only told me and he's dead. I'm going to tell everyone.
Yeah.
And then he sends all the letters out. So I think Stannis, though, one of my favorite characters on the show.
I mean, Stephen DeLane, because he left relatively early, and you kind of knew, after a while he was never going to be king and that he completely fucked it and that Melisandre was just literally still in snake oil. I kind of forgot how powerful he was in every scene, Stephen DeLane. And his first scene, it already his grammar is
he's still a sir. Come on, get that in. That was great.
Which leads to the best scene ever, which was the lesson fewer with Stannis, which doesn't come out for about another five seasons yet, which I'm almost certain must have been an ad lib.
I think they got really good at, I think Stephen DeLane got very good at understanding what would piss this guy off. He's such a hard ass, isn't he? But he has got the claim. He's got the claim. It is his.
I mean, but that's what I was going to say. Out of everybody, all of these kings and whatnot that are, he is the rightful heir. Which was really unjust.
He's so unlovable, and he doesn't. He's actually really similar to Ned. I think very serious, straight through the. No bullshit.
Well, it's very black and white. Very black and white with him, isn't it? It's kind of
Just no one likes him. I mean, he does seem like a dick, but he's right, and I think it's really interesting.
So, what do we ever get to the bottom of why he decided? Why he got kind of sucked into Melisandre's bullshit?
Well, it's not as evident in the show, but his wife gets sucked in first. Wife, who I don't think we met. What?
Oh, always the wife.
The other thing is, again,
darling, I've met someone. I've invited them around for dinner. No, hear them out.
Good, really good friend.
They've got some pamphlets. Yeah.
So, Stannis' wife, who calls Selyse, Florent.
Yeah.
Florents are known for having big ears. It's their main physical characteristic.
Is that in the books, is it? Wow.
Yeah, they've got big ears. That's just a thing.
Very harsh. Very harsh.
And so she's kind of, she's converted to, hang on, am I getting this right? Yeah, Rollor, which is the Lord of Light. And it's Lord a very Light. Weird, very hippy-dippy kind of, not really anyone in Westeros follows the religion. And Stannis sort of adopts it sort of begrudgingly. But he is quite disillusioned with the Faith of the Seven. They burn all those statues on the beach as an offering. But in the book, Stannis' parents died going out on a sea voyage, and he prayed for them to be safe, and they died. And he kind of came away being.
Oh, I see. So he's kind of how can there be a god if children are dying of cancer, kind of thing.
But right, I think see. Melisandre, she's quite captivating, and she. I think she's quite, I think he's kind of drawn to her because she does, he's sort of doing this Faustian thing of I'm going to get in bed literally with someone who can do weird shit because Yeah, like she survived that poisoning in this episode, right? And later on we see her do like weird things. But when I was watching burning all the statues and all of the pulling out the flaming sword, it made me think of House of the Dragon with Aegon's coronation, where it was all about display, like brand building, power, symbolism. And actually the thing when you've got this like crazy red-haired lady where you can do magic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the definitely the jury is out on like what Melisandre's like capable of doing, right? Like it's, no one really understands the magic. It's the fear of what she could do rather than what she's doing that is scary, right? So that's how people fall in line. It's kind of the same with Daenerys and the Dothraki. They're not, they're just a bit like, well, what if you are like really fucking wizardy?
Scared to call the bluff. Yeah,
exactly. So I think it's really interesting. And I think, I thought that's that sort of parallel with House of the Dragon was really interesting, that people are quite cowed by this quite brazen theatricality.
And Selyse in this episode or this season is played, isn't played. So I was like, that doesn't look like Tara Fitzgerald to me. It's not, it's a different actress. Called Sarah McKeever played Selyse in season two. She was uncredited as well. So,
she's Sarah. Probably just not in it that much this season then. I think she's most just kind of time.
I think I'm not even sure we meet Shireen in this
season. I think Shireen might be next season because.
Let me have a look. Let me have a look at the good old Game of Thrones fandom. Shireen doesn't even come into it until season three.
Oh, shit. That's crazy. Yeah, but he does spend most of this episode, most of this season sort of trying to lead a battle.
And banging a witch in a cave.
Don't they have sex on that table? On the table?
The war table in Dragonstone. Yeah. She gives birth in the cave. That's right.
Yeah.
Nice to see that table back. They haven't worked out that if you put the tea lights underneath.
I know. The ancient Targaryen tea lights have been forgotten.
I was like, Stannis, just look underneath. There's a little shelf in there. You just need to put some candles. It looks fucking amazing.
Just some IKEA tea lights in there.
More scintillating candle chat after a word from our sponsors.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I think it's cool seeing locations from House of the Dragon.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved seeing Dragonstone. I was like,
And even like, there. You know, Stannis was master of ships, which is what Corlys was. And like, you know, there's just all these like throwbacks where it's like, oh yeah, you're all in the same world, which kind of
I am enjoying it. I am enjoying that very, very
much. Also, I was just doing a bit of just fact-checking stuff from the episode before we came on. Jorah, I think he talks maybe this episode or the last episode about his wife. You know, he had like a wife that left
That was in the last episode, wasn't it? It was like very expensive wife, Khaleesi.
Yeah, so I had to enslave everyone. She was a Hightower.
Oh. Wow. So, that's and I'd forgotten that Jorah's dad was your man.
Yeah.
was your man, and that Longclaw, John's sword, was originally meant for Jorah.
Yeah, and that John tries giving it back when they go in season 7.
Ah, yes.
And he's like,
of course.
He's like, I was never a good son to him. It belongs to you. It's fucking great. Like, there's so many.
Love all that. All those things. You wouldn't have got that in Lost, would you?
No. And you wouldn't get it now on these shows where it's like Apple TV, like 6 episodes a season. You don't get that. Yeah. You don't get the layers. No, you don't.
Did you ever believe that? Do you remember? And sorry, I'm off on a tangent. Do you remember there was that theory all around the time of John's resurrection and whatnot, and of the wolf on the head of Longclaw and the handle, whatever. Do you remember there was the theory where you could see the eyes open and shut?
No.
Did you ever hear that?
No.
It's really good.
This is a real throwback, but it's like the sword. One of the Power Rangers had a sword with like a face on it that talked.
But around the time, I think there was like, you know, when everything was at fever pitch with Thrones and everyone would go through the trailers kind of literally frame by frame in 4K and kind of like spot. There was a bit where I think it was trying to work out if Jon Snow was still alive or not, whereby I think maybe it was at the end of whatever season it is at the end where he gets killed.
Season five.
There's a bit where apparently the eyes on Longclaw open right at the end.
That's amazing.
And I forgot, I'm annoyed that I forgot to ask anybody officially about that.
I can't wait to get to that point because I think pretending it was like a Who Shot JR kind of cliffhanger when, come on, of course he's not going to fucking die then. I think that was a really bad decision on their part. And I think they should have, you know, of course he's not dead, but it fucking worked.
But it worked.
Yeah.
But we still, everyone's still kind of like, you know, got stuck into that.
But I think the reason for that is where the books end. The books haven't gone any further than that. So people like me who would like feel like they have a PhD in the fucking things were like, I'm scared for season 6 because I don't know what happens. You know, okay, it was pretty great.
Look where that got everyone.
Let's talk about stuff north of the wall. I forgot how good the Craster stuff's really scary. So he is a wildling that, marries all of his daughters. And even now it's like, where do the sons go? And I think I just thought, they must eat them. I think that was my thought.
Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't put it past, you know, it is a bit like that, isn't it? But yeah, I remember writing it down because I was like, oh shit, I remember what happened to the boys now. And then at that moment, John was just like, what happens to the sons?
Yeah. I think this season he sees them leave one out in the snow, a boy. And I was still like,
is it him or is it Samwell? Is it him or Samwell?
Yeah. But I was like, oh, so the White Walkers eat the babies. It wasn't until season 4 when they turn one into a baby White Walker.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, okay. So this isn't
the only time that we see Crash though, is it? Because they're there, they leave and they come back. And it's when they come back that, because I think Sam and Gilly, I think in the next episode, have a little bit of a hoi-hoi. Then they leave, and then when he comes back, he's like, right, I'm taking you with me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's at the duff.
The sort of whole thing, because obviously we'll jump through the season quite briskly, but like they go on this expedition and every step of the way, you know, it goes wrong. And by the
time they go to Mance Raider, right? Are they heading up to Mance Raider?
Well, they're looking for Benjen and they're also gathering intel on like where all the wildlings are, and they found out this episode that Mance has sort of like done what no one's done before and united like, all the wildlings. He's got 100,000 or something. And so they go up to a sort of stronghold called the Fist of the First Men, and that's when they get attacked.
Yeah.
And then they all sort of splinter off. John ends up sort of having to pretend to sort of go in with the wildlings. He goes undercover.
That's where we meet Ygritte, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the guys that come back come to Craster's, and I think that's when the Night's Watch, bearing in mind they're not, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, like they're not nobles, they're not bound by duty, they're all like criminals, they're all like poor, they're all cold, they sort of turn on Craster and like take it over. But again, like all the, you know, the Night's Watch, they go out and I think like 40 of them come back or something. And then it's really like, you know, they're up shit creek, and it's just a very exhaustive, unsuccessful trip to the north.
Yeah. The Cresta was great, actually. I forgot how, he was just a real nasty shit, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I thought I'd recognize him more. I've not seen him in anything since.
No, I wasn't sure.
Like in my, again, bit of Mandela kind of, Mandela effect thing. It's Robert Pugh. It is Robert Pugh. He's been in like tons of stuff, but I've not seen him in much since. Is he still here?
It's so fascinating though that he would take, I mean, it's, you know, he would take a role like this where must only be in like three episodes. They're not big, you know, all done in the same set, like not really, kind of wild that they would just get people of that caliber.
It was a Welsh guy. He's been in, I mean, this was, I think, certainly probably his highest profile, role, but it's been in like loads of, I mean, I guess more of a British actor. He's been in like lots of like Dr. Foster and Prime Suspect and Shameless and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah,
great. He's great though. Great. And again, like
he's the narrator of the repair shop.
Oh my God. You're kidding.
No.
Does he have a Northern accent in that?
No, he's a Welsh. Does he got like a kindly kind of, soft Welsh accent?
I thought it was giving like sort of Sunderland like Gateshead for me. I thought, but no, you're right. It is okay.
There we go.
Yeah, interesting sort of just it's so grim up north kind of energy to that.
No, proper Manchester London conversation going on there, where it's like, no, it's the real.
We're north. You guys think you're north? Like we're north.
Yeah. We're fucking north. I'll tell you that.
I have that conversation with people who are from Leeds, and they're like, I'm a northerner, and I'm like, keep going. And then someone from Glasgow will say to me, like, are you fucking sure about that? You know? It's like that two Ronnies thing where they're like, you know, the three classes. I look up to him and look down on him. You know that sketch, the two Ronnies, where they're like, I'm working class. That's the northerners. But no, I don't love the stuff north of the wall until John sort of goes and like is undercover and he's like shagging Egret. Like that stuff's really cool. And they climb the wall, do you remember, like next season?
Yes.
I was going to say just quickly, Daenerys. So this whole storyline, I think, is so slow, so boring.
It's a tough one to, I can see where they got themselves tied up in knots a little bit, because they realised that she's like in A, she's got to get to B. They've got no way of getting there. They can't realistically kind of like just fast forward them walking across what in my mind is about 1,000 miles or something crazy.
And again, they were being really faithful with adapting the books. And in the book, she only has four chapters, and it's mainly in the desert, still in the desert, get to...
Hold on a second, only four chapters, what, in all of the books?
In the second book.
Oh, in the second book, right,
has four chapters, right? So she goes, I'm in the desert, I get out of the desert to, is it Carth? I think that's the name of the place she ends up.
Yeah, because that's where the dragons
house
get stolen,
the undying and stuff. And then in the book, she gets there, she says to everyone, like, will you help me invade Westeros? And they're all like, no. And then she leaves. Yeah. And like, that's it. And all the stuff where her dragons get like stolen in the show, like they had to just make that up, because they're like, God, everyone's ended season one being like, yes, queen, like, yeah, dragons. And then she doesn't fucking do anything.
She doesn't do anything at all.
So it's a bit of a shame, because it's quite boring, isn't it, really?
It is. But also, you know, I've forgotten actually until I started watching this that Emilia had in between episode 10 and what we saw today, she'd had a brain aneurysm.
This was right.
And had a full on like life death kind of experience, and had to have a proper operation on her skull and all sorts, right?
She did that amazing interview about it season 5 or 6, right? Where she was like,
she didn't tell anybody, did she?
Ill. So maybe it's for the best that there wasn't like a lot to do. So don't really think that was particularly exciting.
No, not really much. It didn't really progress much at all. Although, you know, I mean, I guess the main I guess if there's a shock or a hook in all of it, it was towards the end, where a bit of a naff end scene, I thought, seeing Gendry and Arya just on the the amazing what's now famous road in Belfast, but I'd forgotten about the baby killing, that they were kind of like slaughtering all of Robert's bastards. I was thinking, Christ almighty, for a fat knackered old bloke, he certainly put it about, didn't he? Because there are a lot of babies and kids getting killed.
Yeah, I think he has. I think there's like 11 or something. Like, jeez. And they realize, like, okay,
he's got the energy.
Well, I can't imagine he was. Do you know what? Let's not discuss how he did it. But I can imagine.
It's the Nick Cannon of Westeros.
Yes. But he doesn't clearly doesn't pay child support to any of them either.
No, exactly.
But yeah, again, also in the book, there is one of the bastards that he made live with Stannis just to sort of fuck with him, because Stannis can't have a son. So he has like a...
Wow.
I think that's right. Because what they do in season three, they use Gendry to get King's blood. And in the books, they do it with Edric Storm, which is...
Okay.
That's right. But they just thought, we don't need all the bastards to have main storylines in this show. So they sort of gave Gendry a lot more to do.
They combined a lot of the bastards into Gendry, did they?
But Bastard stuff was hard, I thought.
Yeah, it was a tough... Did you notice there was a similar scene with Jaime and the Direwolf, which I thought was great?
Yeah.
Where they were talking about Rob. It was very, very similar to the scene where Ramsay gets killed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because where the dog
kind of like comes right up to him and licks the blood off his mouth. It was very, very similar to that.
Really, I sort of forgot a lot of the stuff with Rob. You know, he's like smashing it at the moment. And Jamie's taking with him camp to camp, because he's like, if I leave you in one of my strongholds that I've taken, my men might rat you out because they really fucking hate you, but like, I need you alive.
Yeah.
And I thought the parallel between knowing to keep Jaime alive, whereas Joffrey didn't know to keep Ned alive, like, you know, lots of interesting parallels, but...
And there's the friction, a little bit of friction between Catelyn and Rob as well, where Catelyn's trying to guide him and he's kind of like, well, actually, you know, I've got this, mum.
But also she's like, can I go home? He's like, actually, can you go and like meet Renly for me? Cause I'm busy.
Yeah.
She's like, why the fuck would I do that? But it all kind of goes wrong. I mean, it goes all wrong. Like, Theon's already talking about going to see the Greyjoys, and we know that he eventually turns on the Starks.
There's so much
where you're watching it now being like, this could all be prevented. But, you know, Catelyn says, like, Balon Greyjoy, like, they are not nice people. They're not particularly honor-bound. I know we're up against it, but, like, we shouldn't be making alliances with them. They won't hold, and they don't.
Yeah. Shout out to Hodor's scar, which I'd never noticed as well either, which is obviously to cover up Christian's face tattoos.
Oh my God, that's right, because he has like tattoos on here, doesn't he?
It's got stars down the side of his face. Amazing. I never noticed that. I was like looking, I was like, there's a little scar. They must just like slap that on every time.
Bran Stark is so young. I can't get over how little he is, isn't it?
Such a high voice.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the warging. It was back for the first introduction to warging as well. We didn't really quite know what was going on, but again, still one of my favorite.
Yeah, and he's the only one that really in the show, they don't really go into much detail about it, but like, yeah, he's the only one of the Starks that really does it. But like, I guess Arya, well, I mean, they all do it in the books, basically. They're not really sure what it is, but it's very effective. And I think, I guess because he can't use his legs, it's maybe he's able to use it more, like it's a bit stronger.
Yeah.
Everyone else, like, no disrespect to Bram, but everyone else is quite busy, so they're probably not thinking, they're just like, oh, I had a weird dream, whereas he's like, I've got nothing to do, I wonder what my dreams mean. Again, very horoscopy episode, like,
yeah.
And it really sets up a lot of the, you know, lots of opposition rising against the crown. No one believes that Joffrey's the true heir, which is correct. And I thought it was really good when Cersei says something like, support your claim to the throne, and he's like, it's not a claim, I have and she's like, right. Even she knows, you know.
I'm just looking through some of the like notes from this episode. Two of Craster's wives were actually the director's daughters, which feels a little bit
It's grim.
It's a bit of a strange
cameo. How did you get the role as daughter wife number 7? My dad got it for me.
Yeah. It's like, great news, daughters. I'm directing an episode of Game of Thrones. Would you like to be a cameo? Yeah, please. Well, you've got a choice. So there's either a woman called Roz or a guy called Caster. Choose your side really, really carefully. Yeah. Neither of which were great.
That's so depressing.
What else we got? Rob, it says here, Rob has no way to know that Jamie pushed Bran from the window. Only 4 people know that. Jamie, Cersei, and later on, Catelyn and Brienne. Rob could have deduced it, though, similar to the way Catelyn figured it out in the novels, based on the information Stannis revealed about Jamie and Cersei's relationship.
Yeah.
But only 4 people know. So, yeah, for him to kind of, like, try and call Jamie's bluff there, Jamie's, like, smarter than that.
That's why Jamie is like, have you got any proof? Because he's like, how the fuck do you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was there.
So Stannis sent letters to everyone in this episode saying Robert didn't leave a Trueborn heir. The Joffrey, Marcella, and Tommen are bastards from Cersei and Jaime. Yeah. So in what is implied is that everyone got the letter and went, Jaime and Cersei are fucking. That's why none of us saw them at the hunt, or that's why, they were disappeared one afternoon at Winterfell. And they, there's a lot of gymnastics for Rob to have to get to that point.
Yeah.
An interesting point. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Okay, I think that's pretty much wraps it up. I thought it was a good, solid season opener.
It's great.
But I'd still love to know what other people's Mandela effect thought was of that opening scene. Mm. I could have sworn on my bloody children's lives that opened with Stannis on the beach. Absolutely.
I really agree with you.
Unless one of the later seasons or one of the later episodes opens with a similar thing. And I think actually that's what's happened. There's another episode of Game of Thrones later on where they're flaying, where there's men being burnt at the stake.
Oh,
Stannis
does.
Yeah, there's another scene on the beach at night where men are being burned alive, maybe by the Boltons, because they're the flayed.
Yeah, but they don't live near the beach.
No, they don't.
This is interesting. I think we're onto something here.
Yeah, I think there's an episode later on where
I sort of think they maybe burn all the people that don't support. Is it maybe when Renly dies and they?
No, I think it's far later than that. I think it's when Melisandre's on the ropes. I think it's whenever. What was Stannis' last season? Season 6?
5.
Season 5. I think it's somewhere in season 5 when it's after Shireen.
They burn loads of people to they think it'll give the Lord of Light a sacrifice and he'll clear the snow. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, getting ready for the. Yeah, I think I'm almost certain that that's what's happened here.
Interesting. Also, did not know about that, about Stannis' wife being recast. That is great inside baseball.
Quite a few people were recast, weren't they? Because I think Tommen is not.
He does get recast.
It's not your man.
He does. And also, obviously, Marcella does when she comes back. Well, she doesn't actually come back from Dawn because she dies on the boat back. But when she's in Dawn in season 5, again, can't wait to discuss that because that was a really, really awful storyline.
It was, wasn't it? Really miserable. Great. Listen, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. I had some trepidation about it. Maybe the trepidation is waiting for us in episode 5, which will be next week. So episode 5 is, what was it called again?
Harrenhal.
The Ghost of Harrenhal. Let's see what the Wikipedia entry is for that.
And the reason it is named so is, I presume Arya's at Harrenhal at that point. Because she obviously works for Tywin, she's a cupbearer for him, and he knows that she's not a common girl, but he doesn't realise she's a Stark. And she's just pouring his wine, and there's a few chats with him. I think also there's chats about the Dance of the Dragons in that episode, so that'll be really interesting.
Oh.
I'm sure that's one of the episodes where they talk about...
Actually, it's a pretty good episode, I think. We meet Darion. No, not Darion Aharis. Fucking hell! What's his name? The faceless man. What's his name? Jaqen H'ghar.
Yeah.
It's bad news for Renly. And also Tyrion discovers the wildfire, which I love.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So quite a good episode. So good choice, everybody.
Also, I mean, he's going to die in this episode. I loved Renly Baratheon.
He was great.
Beautiful. He was great. Would have been a great king, I think.
It would. He would have been a good king. Wore the crown very well. Great little page boy haircut. Loved the little kind of crop. Very, very Michael Hutchence circa 1996.
Yeah. Wonder great. What's the actor do? You don't see him in anything, do you? Is he called Gethin something?
Renly Baratheon.
Gethin Anthony.
Where are you?
Oh my God. Seen his Wikipedia? He's even more handsome on his Wikipedia page. He's got like a sort of quiffy,
I'm looking up. Yeah, very, very nice. Very man. He's 39 from Stratford upon Avon. He does comic cons. Should we message him, see if he wants to come on? Does anyone know how he would get hold of him? How would we get hold of him?
Well, I'll look. I have IMDb Pro, so I can find his agent's email address.
Do you?
Yeah, I just had to get it when I went freelance. I was like, I'm going to need a way to get in touch with people. And everything is on IMDb, but you have to pay. That's the fucking drawback.
Do you? What's he been in since? He's not been in. He's been. Let's big him up just in case he does come on and listens to this. So he's not been in anything quite as high profile, but he's been a very busy working young man.
Do you know what he has? He's been
consistent.
He was in Call the Midwife.
There you go.
I'm going to play Charles Manson in a show called Aquarius.
Wow, he was in that for 30 episodes. 30 Jesus episodes? Christ.
We should get him
on. More than Gameth.
I would.
Yeah, let's see what Gethin / Renly is up to, because we don't hear from him often, which I guess means.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
He's just not interested in talking about it, but let's find out, shall we?
He might be around.
Let's find out.
Be great. Okay, well, that's some homework for us. And next
lovely
week,
stuff. And next week, we will be talking about that. We're going to record OA season part 1 episode 3 shortly. That will probably come out next week because episode 2 will come out tomorrow. I've messed the whole fucking thing up, but we'll work it out.
Part of the cosmic alignment of the OA.
Yeah man
just burn some sage, chill out, man.
Yeah exactly. All right. Until then, Christopher Mandel, lovely wet twat. Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.